We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Good Friday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests today will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Hope you and yours are safe, sound, and well. We have a lot to get into, including what we just talked about there in the rejoin. But
right,
before we get into that, Mike, something happened yesterday which made us think of something, and that led us to putting something out there on our Twitter feed, which I think is kind of fun.
It's Friday. We're going to get into, obviously, a very serious discussion here, but we also like to have your guys' input on. I like to make sure we can make people smile a little bit as well, or make you relive a bad memory, I guess. But, you know, the Travelers yesterday, the first round, which is led by
Mackenzie Hughes.
Mackenzie Hughes. And we do that because Trey feels that name deserves to be said that
My way. God, he was fantastic yesterday on the links.
Mackenzie Hughes, by the way, the last round last week shot a 78, the worst score of that day. And then yesterday, he shot a career low 60.
He improved by 18 strokes.
He is 10 under. But other news coming out, Phil Mickelson, who in normal qualification for the U.S. Open would have been on the outside looking in of where he was ranked. He was ranked 61st in the world at March 15th when golf froze. But they changed it because they can't have any qualifying, so they're saying the top 70 are in. So he is in. Yeah. And the U.S. Open, again, he finished second there six times. And then you can explain quickly the worst one, what was it, an 06 at Wingfoot?
Yeah,
where, actually where the U.S. Open is going to be held this year.
Right.
Same place.
He stood on the tee on the 18th hole with a one-stroke lead. He hit his drive so far left it fell into a trash can. He had to take a drop, then he bounced it off a tent, ended up making a double bogey, and didn't even get into a playoff, allowing Jeff Ogilvie to win his own.
Unbelievable. Game. So we put at Golic and Wingo, Mickelson qualified for the U.S. Open at Wingfoot, site of his biggest nightmare. What is the site of your biggest nightmare and why? So what is your biggest sports nightmare out there? That was Phil's, no doubt about it. Six times a bridesmaid, and that one, he had a one-stroke lead going into the last hole. So at Golic and Wingo, give us your worst sports nightmare.
And the weirdest thing about that is, you know, everyone talks about the Tiger Slam when he had all four trophies at one time, even though it wasn't in a calendar year.
Right.
Had he won that one, Mickelson would have been three quarters of the way to the Mickle Slam, because he won the PGA Championship in 2005, and then he won the Masters for the second time in 2006, and he was one bad drive away from having three, and then going into the Open Championship with potential for his own Mickle Slam, but alas, it was not to be. So we'll see what happens there, get those things on our Twitter feed and keep them coming out. We'll have some of those through the day, but we're all still dealing with what did happen and what didn't happen and what was the actual situation that happened at NASCAR over the weekend in Talladega. As it turns out, the FBI said that it was not a hate crime committed against NASCAR's driver Bubba Wallace when a noose was found in his garage at Talladega Motor Speedway, because it had been there since October. At some point, the last race in October at Talladega, when NASCAR had been there, not when the weekend started in October,
when it ended.
By the end of that time, that noose, as a rope pulled down for the garage door, was hanging in that garage. And a lot of people are like, oh, see, this is all overblown, all this kind of stuff, it's ridiculous, blah, 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 blah. And then NASCAR released the photo yesterday of the pull down in that garage. It is a noose in every way, shape, or form.
So let's remember the kind of the timeline here, when someone in Bubba Wallace's crew, who was an African-American as well, saw that noose. Before he reported it, he went and checked all the garages there at Talladega just to make sure, you know, that this wasn't the way the rope poles were tied there.
Right.
He just wanted, you know, to do a little due diligence and saw that there were no others that looked like that. So that's when he reported it, and that's when, you know, the NASCAR came out with their statement, and that's when the FBI got involved. And we know subsequently NASCAR said it wasn't directed at Bubba because it was found last October. But it was, there was a, an investigation then done afterward.
Right.
And Steve Phelps, the, again, the NASCAR president, talks about the actual number of pulled out ropes in all the race tracks that NASCAR uses.
So let me tackle the last one first. NASCAR conducted a thorough sweep of all the garage areas across where the tracks where we race. So across those 29 tracks and 1,684 garage stalls, we found only 11 total that had a pull-down rope tied in a knot and only one noose, the one discovered on Sunday in Bubba Wallace's garage. We further determined that the noose was not in place when the October 2019 race weekend began, but was created at some point during that weekend. Given that timing and the garage access policies and procedures at the time, we were unfortunately unable to determine with any certainty who tied this rope in this manner or why it was done.
And I think there's a lot to really understand and emphasize there. They went to every single track that NASCAR races on, 29. They looked at over 1,600 garage stalls, and they only found 11 instances where the pull-down was tied in a knot in any way, shape, or form. And there was only one, that was at Talladega in Alabama that was in the shape of a noose.
So, again, this wasn't directed at Bubba Wallace because it was there last October at the end of the weekend. So that certainly has been determined.
And real quickly, because there was no way that anybody would have known that Bubba would be using that specific garage, because that was based on points.
Garages
that
are
no one would have
points.
Known. No one would have known.
Exactly right. Steve Phelps also went on because there was a lot of criticism, especially from a number of people out there about the way NASCAR was so definitive about their statement once it was reported what was found. Steve Phelps talked about that.
Secondly, there's been discussion and criticism on how this was handled and characterized. Some feel that the phrasing or words used were not right. That comes with the territory, and I will take full responsibility for that and for the emotion that was attached to it. Based on the evidence we had, we felt that one of our drivers had been threatened, a driver who had been extremely courageous in recent words and actions. It was our responsibility to react and investigate, and that's exactly what we did.
So again, he said, if I had to do it over again, I would have used the word alleged.
Right.
But understand the moment, okay? You had Bubba Wallace just a week or so ago saying, let's remove the Confederate flag. And NASCAR acted swiftly and removed the Confederate flag, basically saying you're not allowed to have that at any tracks anymore. That upset a part of their fan base.
Right.
I cannot say in any
Can't
way,
say
shape,
a large,
no,
right, but a part,
part
of it.
A part of their fan base, a very passionate part of their fan base. You know, our own, Brian McGee wrote a great article on ESPN.com about that, and where that flag should be and where it shouldn't be. And that created a major backlash. And what happened the day of the race? There was a flag on the back of a plane flying over Talladega, which was the Confederate flag that said defund NASCAR. There was a parade of trucks outside the Talladega Raceway where nothing but Confederate flags were going up and down the street because they weren't going to be allowed inside the racetrack. So under a very tense, heightened situation, you see what is clearly a noose and the only noose in any way, shape, or form in a knot that was part of a garage door pull down and all of the NASCAR garages, you are going to take a look at that and take a look at it very
seriously.
Well, especially
it was in Bubba Wallace, exactly. The only African-American racer.
Who had been outspoken about getting rid of the Confederate flag.
Again, if you want to focus in and we're covering this because this is the latest news that came out. And again, Steve Phelps, if you want to focus on the fact that he should have used the word alleged and not come out so hard on the hate crime and who's ever did this is out of the sport. And remember, no individual got dragged through the mud on this one.
Right.
Okay. So if those people saying who was hurt, nobody was hurt here. No individual was hurt here. If you want to say he used the wrong word, okay, that's fine.
You can focus on that if you want.
That part of the story was wrong, and we all talked about it. You want to focus on it, that's fine. But this is now more information that we're getting, and still all that even being said, I'll continue to say, don't shoot the arrow at the wrong target.
Right.
Okay. There's the bigger issue here of what NASCAR has been doing, and really even outside of NASCAR and other sports and the country that has been doing. So we're getting more information on this one specific thing that the president of NASCAR talked about, but we still need to make sure the focus is where it needs to be.
And then the question would be, why would someone want to make a noose and put it in a locker to begin with?
And that's why Steve Phelps also said there's going to be some training going on by the crews in NASCAR to say
not the only way to make a knot.
So for months, people are walking by that and seeing a noose and nobody saying anything about it. So
correct.
There's that part of it as well.
All right. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Coming up next, one college coach is handling this season much differently in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. We'll ask him about it next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Our phone guests joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line as colleges, Mike, have started to bring back athletes across the country, and they're dealing with what a lot of people are dealing with, a lot of positive tests for COVID-19 and how that's going to affect preparations for not only everything, but specifically college football.
I don't think it shouldn't be shocking that when players are coming in from around the country that there are positive tests. This is the whole idea of testing is to identify those players, whether it's symptomatic or asymptomatic. It doesn't matter. And then isolating them from the rest of the players. So eventually you're hoping to get, all the negative tests. Now, what's different of the NFL, obviously, than college is now you're going to incorporate fan or students back on campus and bringing in others in there with the possible spread of the virus. So a lot to deal with for colleges, a lot to deal with for coaches as well. One of those coaches joins us now, James Franklin, head coach at Penn State. Coach, we appreciate you joining us this morning. So how has it been going from the testing process to positive tests to just how the players have been responding to the voluntary workouts?
Good morning, guys. Appreciate you having us on. As you can imagine, it's like most things, I guess. You work extremely hard and you're as thorough as you possibly can and you're detailed and you have what you think is a great plan. And that's theory. And then you get into reality of them coming back and it's challenging. It's extremely challenging. And, we were fortunate that we took a little bit more of a patient approach than most because we wanted to be able to learn from other colleges. We wanted to be able to learn from other professional sports leagues, things they did well, maybe some things that they would have done differently. And for the most part, things have been good. The other thing I think we did a pretty good job of is on the front end, we had weekly meetings with both the parents and the players while they were home, explaining everything in detail. And also making sure that everybody knew that there was no pressure and this was truly a choice, whether they wanted to come back or not. And we have 38 players that have not returned, including 6 scholarship players. So it is truly voluntary. I know that's kind of some of the thoughts out there. Oh, this isn't voluntary. Well, I can tell you at Penn State it is. And then the guys that have been back, I think, are very comfortable with how it's been going. It's not easy. They have to wear masks all the time. They can't get into the facility without, answering a questionnaire when they get up in the morning. They get their temperature taken before they come in. Any symptoms, any signs, any issues, obviously then we deal with that and quarantines go into effect. And then everybody's been tested. We all did the nose test, which I'll tell you, it wasn't very fun, getting that thing stuck down your nose. But so far, so good. And I think our parents and our players that have returned are appreciative of how thorough we've been. And be honest with you, it's gone well, you know, and even for the staff, it's different, you know, so we're doing every other day. The offense is in one day, staff, and the defense is in another day. And we are all sitting in the team meeting room so we can spread out, far enough in the room from each other. We all got assigned seats. We're wearing masks, sitting in there watching film and game planning. And I come in every day, and then the offense and defense rotate by days. And then we don't have any of the non-essential staff here. They're continuing to all work from home via Zoom. So it's just offense and defensive coaches every other day, and then the strength staff and the medical staff's all here, and that's pretty much it. So far, so good. I know that was a long answer, but I wanted to be thorough with you guys.
No, we appreciate it. Yeah. And that's what we're looking for, as much information as possible, as James Franklin, Penn State head coach, is with us. And, Coach, for you, it's a different scenario. You are at Happy Valley. Your family is staying home at Florida. And you have some members of your family that might have some things that might compromise them. Is that why you decided to do this the way you've done it?
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, let me state this. You know, we're fortunate as a family that we do have a second home, and I know not everybody has that option, so let me lead with that. But yeah, you know, we were in Florida. We have a place in Florida. We've been there basically for the last couple months. You know, my wife has been extremely, you know, sensitive to all of this, and we have been, when I tell you we have not left our property in months, you know, we would order our groceries to be delivered. They'd sit outside for a certain period of time. We'd wipe them down. Our youngest, we have two daughters. They're 11 months apart. One is 12 and one is 13. And our youngest daughter has sickle cell disease, not trait. She's got the full blown disease. So for us, you know, our child's experience is a little bit different than most. So, you know, everything that you have to worry about with your child, is just heightened for us. So if our daughter gets a fever, she's in the hospital for 48 hours. That's been her entire life until it clears. Sickle cell is an African-American blood disease. It's an autoimmune, makes her susceptible, you know, to a lot of things. And to be honest with you, with the virus, we don't completely know how it's going to affect her. So as a family, you know, we just decided, you know, for us, that it'd probably be in our best interest for our family to stay in Florida and for us to be apart, you know, for at least the first half of the year, because my wife and kids come to the office all the time. They come to practice all the time. They come to all the games, obviously. And we just felt like them being here in town, it'd be challenging for me to come to work every single day and then come home to them. And we thought it'd be challenging if they were in this town to not be coming to games and practices and the facility. It would be more challenging. And, you know, we decided to homeschool our kids this year because we didn't feel like our other daughter could go to school and bring issues home to our other daughter. So I know there's a lot of people are dealing with this with some family member, a wife or a husband or a child. But that's how we have chose to deal with this. And as you can imagine, a lot of tears, you know, when possibly, you know, we're going to be apart for possibly 6 months. So that was difficult getting on that, you know, plane to come back to Happy Valley and leave my family for a long period of time.
Certainly that is, without question, the most important thing is the health of your family, especially your daughter who suffers from that. So I'd imagine that's got to be weighing heavy on your mind. And then, again, there's the football part of this, and you just – you gave a great explanation of where you are now. So when, if everything still runs according to plan,
hey guys,
we know.
Can I say one more thing? I apologize.
Yes.
And just so you know, just again, to be thorough with this, you know, we have a player on our team that's got an autoimmune, you know, disease. Right. And, you know, him and his family, they want to come back. He said, Coach, we've been fighting with this and dealing with this, you know, our whole life. And, you know, we want to come back and be a part of the program. And we have taken a more conservative approach as a program than the young man and the family want to. We just feel like that's the right thing to do. And then, you know, we're starting to come out with an entirely different plan for him when and if we do bring him back and how we'll do that. You know, so I guess what I'm saying is there's just so many details, and football is challenging just based on the numbers. You know, when you got certain sports and maybe there's 15 players, that's one thing, but when you got 120 players and staff with so many different backgrounds and health issues and concerns, you know, there's just a lot that goes into all of this.
So then it leads me perfectly into this next question. There is so much that schools, athletic directors, you as head coaches have to deal with, but then eventually, coach, you got to play football.
Right.
So the NCAA has given dates where you can compare it to kind of like OTAs in the NFL. When, if everything is, when will you actually be on the field and oh my God, actually having a huddle and having players play on the field the game of football?
Well, one positive, as you guys know, is no one huddles anymore, so that helps a little bit. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, for all of us, and this is in football, and this is in life, and this is state by state and businesses, is we got to do everything we possibly can do to keep everybody as safe as we can. You know, and then with that, people have choices to make. Our players have choices to make. The staff has choices to make. You know, local government's got choices to make. Fans have choices to make. You know, and the reality is we can't reduce all risk. That's just a reality. And that's always the case. You know, you're going to take on some risk. But the thing that you have to do is you have to be educated and you have to be informed. And I'm a big believer in science, and I'm a big believer in listening to experts, and then make the best choices we possibly can make. But I think at the end of the day, as long as everybody is informed and you're doing everything you possibly can to keep everybody healthy, you know, then I think you got a chance. And for me, you know, I feel good because I think in the state of Pennsylvania, you look at our numbers, we've done a really good job of handling this. I'm going to be honest with you. Being in the South, in Florida, it was a different world than being in Pennsylvania. You know, yeah. You're in Pennsylvania, everybody's wearing a mask, there's social distancing, you go into a grocery store, it's amazing how they're running the grocery stores and everything else, and our numbers are really good. And then there's other states and other areas that you look on social media or you watch TV or you look outside, and it's very different. You know, so we're fortunate that the state of Pennsylvania has handled this extremely well. But as you know, when you're playing college football, you're not just dealing with the state of Pennsylvania. You're traveling and all the issues that come with that. So, you know, I think for us, I'm pleased with how we've gone about it. But, you know, there's so many challenges that come with it. You know, I think we got a really good plan when the players are with us. But what happens when they go away? You know, when they go away from us and they're back in their apartments or they're back in their dorms. You know, that's the challenge, because we got to remember they're still 18 to 22 year old kids, which, you know, based on my 25 years of experience, 18 to 22 year old males are the most unpredictable people on the planet. And yeah, we got to spend as much time talking to them and informing them and educating them on the sacrifices that they have to make this work. And then I think we also have responsibility through social media or whatever else it is to educate our fans. You know, we averaged 106,000 fans per game last year. We averaged. So our fans want that, you know, and I don't think that's going to happen. But if you do, then the better that we're all behaving, you know, in terms of following all these protocols, the better chance that we have to have something that looks similar to that.
So, James, we're running up against the clock here, but I did want to ask you this one real quickly, as Penn State head coach Jane Franklin is with us. We've seen a lot of player empowerment for causes that they believe in recently, with what happened at Chuba Hubbard at Oklahoma State, Kylan Hill at Mississippi State. You dealt with something on a different level last year when a couple of Penn State players received letters basically saying, hey, cut your hair, do this to look more like a Penn State player. They made those letters public, and you guys backed your players. What are you seeing in terms of players standing up for things that they believe, and specifically in the social injustice that has been sweeping across this country?
Well, I think, first of all, as an African-American head football coach, you know, one of very few in all of Division I athletics, you know, I have a responsibility to empower our players and empower our staff to have great discussions and dialogue. And how can we make Penn State better? How can we make our community better? How can we make our state better, our country and our world better at some point? And, you know, whenever adversity or challenges come, you know, the reality is there's tremendous opportunity in that, you know, so that's how we're embracing it. We've had great conversations as a team. We've had great conversations with the president of our university and the chair of the board. And we want to make change that we think is needed. But, you know, our players have done a great job of having really good discussions and dialogue and creating allies across the campus and across the community of how can we work together to create a better Penn State, to create a better world for our children one day. So, you know, I'm very proud of how our program has handled it. We want to continue to do that. There should be uncomfortable conversations going on around the dinner table of America. There should be uncomfortable conversations happening in a locker room. People have to be comfortable to speak up because the only way we're going to grow through this and the only way we're going to evolve is people willing to be vulnerable. And that is black people, that is white people, that is Catholic people, that is Jewish people. We got to talk. And I think one of the biggest problems we've had in our country for a long time is too many smart people have been uncomfortable having this conversation, so they've avoided it. Let's talk.
Yeah, can't avoid it anymore. Yep. Coach, as always, we appreciate your time, your perspective. All my best to you and your family, okay?
Thanks, Coach.
You too, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, James Franklin, always a great listen.
And so, very thorough there.
Absolutely. So we appreciate all of his insights on that. Coming up, what is your worst sporting nightmare that you would return to if you had to? We'll get to that after SportsCenter.
11,016 days after last winning the English top flight in 1990, Liverpool clinched its 19th league title and first Premier League championship to end the 30-year drought as Manchester City lost 2-1 to Chelsea. That sealed the title for Liverpool and capped for Liverpool a dominant campaign for Jurgen Klopp's team, which earned 28 wins in 31 games. Manchester City is now 23 points behind Liverpool with just 7 matches to go. First round of the Travelers. Who's leading, Trey?
Mackenzie Hughes.
He posted a career low 60. He is 10 under atop the leaderboard by 3 strokes. That's tied for the largest 18-hole lead in tournament history. Each of the last 2 solo 18-hole leaders went on to win. That'd be Spieth in 17, Bubba Watson in 2015. Rory, Xander Schauffele, and Victor Hovland all finished the day tied for second at just a measly 7 under. On this date, June 26, 2002, Yao Ming selected number 1 overall by the Rockets in the NBA draft. The first time a player who had played neither high school nor college basketball in the U.S. was the top pick. 8 seasons in the NBA, Yao would average 19-9. That is SportsCenter brought to you by Barbasol. Feeling great starts with a great shave, and great shave starts with Barbasol Shaving Cream. That's Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American classic for over 100 years. You're looking good, America. You're shaving with Barbasol.
Well, right now that plan is still to go forward and play football as best as they can.
There's no thought of canceling the season.
None. Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And delighted to be joined to talk a little football and a bunch of other things.
This is bad timing award for Dan being on the show today, given our poll question. Yeah, Dan, we apologize.
It wasn't framed this way on purpose.
We did not say, oh, Dan's on the show, so let's ask this question. This was fully around Phil Mickelson, so as we welcome in Dan Orlovsky, we're just going to openly say we're sorry.
Okay, what's going on? What do we got?
So, all right, we might as well do it.
Yeah, well, listen, here's the deal. Phil Mickelson just qualified for the U.S. Open, which is at Wingfoot because they changed the parameters from the top 70. Normally it's a 60. When golf rose, he was a 61st. Obviously, it's the site of his... obviously it's the site of his worst sporting nightmare, which is when he had a 1-stroke lead and then hit it off a tent in a trash can and lost the U.S. Open. He's been a runner-up 6 times.
So bottom line, we asked everybody, what's your worst sports nightmare? At Golic and Wingo, we're getting a ton of responses.
Where would you return to it?
And then we had you today, and we're like, oh, God.
We're sorry.
So
we feel bad.
For those, and I know it comes up in your Twitter feed all the time when you're making a point and someone wants to get at you, but I'm going to imagine this was your worst nightmare, and if so, we hate making you relive it, but
go ahead, sorry. Anyway.
I'm sure you guys are absolutely devastated that you have to ask this question. I'm sure it's killing you guys inside and you'll struggle to sleep at night. My worst sporting moment, I'm going to give you two, really. One is obviously me running out of the back of an end zone mid-play against the Minnesota Vikings. Now, a couple caveats to that. I had Jared Allen chasing me, who's a known psychopath. So, you know, it was more of a, outside of the football, safety for my life thing. Two, better than me fumbling, allowing him to recover it and giving them a touchdown. I mean, there is math involved in here that make it a better situation. I do get reminded of that daily, so I'm thankful for that. But I'll throw another one at you just so people can hear a different one. My sophomore year of high school, I grew up in Connecticut. And there's a pocket of Connecticut that's got some pretty good, decent high school football for Connecticut, known as the Valley. That's where I'm from. And it's Thanksgiving Day. There's a rivalry with a cross-the-river town called Derby High School. Again, my sophomore year, we're a really good team. I'm a young player, all that stuff. Thanksgiving Day, it's pouring rain out. I mean, torrential downpour. We play, and we're tied 7-7. If we win the game, we go to the playoffs. If we go to the playoffs, you probably got a pretty good chance. Win the game, go to the playoffs. Tie or lose the game, we don't make it. We finally get the ball, a couple minutes. We're running, you know, kind of marching down the field, game-winning drive. And we get the ball down to the one-yard line, call timeout with like 4 seconds left. Can't kick a field goal because the weather is just too bad. At this moment of the game, I had 8 fumbles. Quarterback center exchange fumbles. On the 1 yard line. We call a run play. Fumble number 9 happens. I fumble the snap. We tie the game. We don't go to the playoffs. And so that was a moment where that was my first moment of pure embarrassment where I had to like walk into our locker room and tell all our older kids, dude, I'm sorry for blowing the season. So for all my Lions fans out there, it wasn't the first time, guys.
Wow, and I could see in high school that's devastating. Tough. Wow,
I'm thinking that was pouring rain. All the right moves, Tom Cruise and pipe. I mean that's all I'm thinking right now. My God,
wow.
So let's move on now to something a little more pertinent. The NFL has said, look, they canceled the Hall of Fame game, which was the first preseason game. But right now, Dan, it is all systems go. How confident are you that we will still be all systems go with training camp starting in a month?
Yeah, I'm still really confident in that. I mean, I think if you listen to Roger Goodell's, you know, comments yesterday, and I'll kind of point to the PGA Tour and Jay Monahan, their commissioner, going like, listen, we're going to have to find a way to live with this while also being as careful as we can. And then you listen to Roger Goodell yesterday and him going, all right, so, you know, there's obviously been a lot of change the last few weeks. Like, we all need to understand, I think we do with our life, that this is something that is constantly changing day to day, but it's also obviously constantly changing for the sports leagues as well. And Roger Goodell talking about it's changed throughout the last few weeks, and we still are in our process of ensuring player safety, the changing demographic. They're paying attention to all the information of all the other leagues. They want to do the ambitious testing. And so I'm still very confident in it. I know that people are like, man, we're only X amount of days away. But we're in a much different place than we were 2 weeks ago. And so we're going to be in a much different place 2 weeks from now. And so, you know, I think the NFL there's this group of people who think like the NFL is just like flying by the seat of their pants of this. I think the NFL is having just multiple plans for multiple to be as agile as possible. And so I still think we will play. I disagree with Malcolm Jenkins. Respectfully, I do think it's essential business. And I think we'll have the NFL season in some capacity.
So along those lines, and I heard you say this on First Take, Your Take with Jason Fitz, and I agreed with you 1,000%, but I want to let you say it in your words. Again, Malcolm Jenkins was on CNN and he basically said football is a non-essential business. You can take that or leave it, whatever you want. But basically he said, so the risk has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable going back. We know the risk isn't going to be eliminated. We see players in other sports, Dan, choosing not to go for a variety of reasons. And you said this on First Take, Your Take, about the majority of players in the NFL, they're going to have a choice whether they want to show up or not on why they will show up.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL is going to have players like an Avery Bradley, who have said, you know what, I can't because of my family. There's underlying situations within my family that I can't expose myself or them to. But 60% plus of the NFL is minimum salary guys. 60+% of it are minimum salary guys. And then the average career is 3 or 4 years. And so Mike, you know this. You spend a ton of time in the locker room. Guys, a great majority of the NFL guys live paycheck to paycheck. They are not just taking care of their family. They're taking care of their families, plural, family members. And so it's essential because those guys that are at the third year of their career, this might be the last year that they can make that $500,000 or $600,000. They need this season. And that's why those guys are going to sit there and go, wait, this is the only opportunity I have to make that money. Tell me where and when. Tell me what I have to do. I'll quarantine myself for 150 days or 180 days away from my family because that's the only way I'll make my money. My wife is going to agree with that as well. And so, you know, if you're a guy who's in your fourth year and it's a contract year for you and you have to go perform to receive that second contract, you're going to be like, when and where? I'm going to sign up and I'll figure out a way to make sure that this season for me happens because I need it to happen. And so I think there's that stark reality. Very few members of the NFL are the $5, $8, $10 million guys that have some. And I looked at it like this. When we talk about strikes in the labor union, I remember back in 2011 when the lockout happened, and they were putting funds aside for every single player to make sure that they had money to fall back on if the strike went for a couple months so they didn't cross the line and just, I'll play for whatever. This is a very similar situation. Guys need that money. And so that's why I think it is essential for so many.
Completely agree. Yeah. Not only would I have played, my wife would have handed me a lunch and kicked me out the door to go play.
So No doubt.
1,000% correct in this.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Again, we're about a month away, and they're going to do as much as they can. But at the end of the day, at some point, you're either going to play or you're not going to play.
Yep.
Because it's not going away. It is not going to be going away in a month.
Again, sorry, Dan, for doing that to you.
That's our fault. And by the way, I must share since Dan's on, he saw one of my most embarrassing sports moments last year where he were playing right in front of me or behind me at the pro-am at the TPC.
Ooh.
First tee crowd there.
How far do you think that first tee ball went?
About 20 yards.
20 yards.
I stone cold topped it 20 yards into the rough.
I think that's exactly Dan went through in the NFL game, you know, running out of save with all those people watching.
No, it was pretty embarrassing. Sure. Dan was great. He said, I did the same thing last year. He was trying to coach me up, right? And I appreciated it, brother. I just wanted you to know that.
Trey, you know how you think that ball went 20 yards? I think I was only 1 foot out of bounds.
There you go. Well played, Dan. Well played. All right, man. Thanks.
All right, Dan. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Be good, guys. Bye-bye.
He was right. Literally, I stone cold topped it off the first tee, and it was really nice. I said, yeah, I did the same thing last year. I'm not even sure that he did, but he was being very, very nice. Coming up, an organization that has perfected the art of being tone deaf.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
That Bite's brought to you by Sherwin-Williams. Ask Sherwin-Williams and save 30% on paints and stains now through June 30th. Shop in-store or order online for curbside pickup. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. Check out the store for all the details.
All right, Golican Wingo here with you on a Friday morning. Normally on That Bites, we look back at the best and worst of the week and the sound bites that we heard and put them all together. And at times, it's really us fumbling and jumbling the
pretty much
language. I mean, we're a big part of this.
Mm-hmm.
We got a special treat for you this week. It's really just one thing. We need to give you the backdrop of it. You know, the Astros, they've had their issues recently. I believe the word tone deaf would be some things about, you know, taunting some women who are wearing support against people who have been victims of domestic violence, which led to cleaning of the front office on a lot of levels. And then the cheating scandal, with the baseball bats and the whistles and the banging on the drums. So they all said it never happened. Then, of course, it actually did all happen, led to that. And now we've got baseball trying to get back and play some games. Well, Jim Crane is the owner of the Astros. And in talking to Yahoo Finance, basically he said, you know, we're going to lose about $3 billion. And he said, the only thing we have to do that we can counter that is get some people into the building and sell some tickets and some merchandise and some cold beer or whatever they let us have. This is what Jim Crane had to say. Keep in mind, he said this in the midst of a massive spike of COVID-19 cases in the state of Texas and specifically in Houston, where they the state eclipsed 5,000 cases and hospitalization surpassed 4,000 for a second straight day. Dr. Peter Hotez says of the situation in Houston, it is absolutely horrifying. He's the dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine. So it's as bad as it can be right now in Texas, and Houston specifically as a hotspot. And Jim Crane's out there. We need to put some butts in the seats, ladies and gentlemen.
As the governor basically has stopped the reopening of the state. So our Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN Radio, Freddie and Fitzsimmons, well, yeah, just listen. Okay.
Okay.
This has worked out well.
Everything crashed.
Everything crashed is what we got in our ears.
Everything crashed.
So, well, Ian Fitzsimmons, like most people, are going to go off. Jim Crane has been said to be tone deaf on some of the other things going on with that organization. So, I mean, it's going horribly.
Look, man.
In Texas right now.
No, we got it.
Do
we have it?
Look, man, I don't give a bleep about, you know, what's going on out there. We need butts in seats and buy some cold beer because my billionaire butt needs money. I mean, are you that tone deaf? Are you that clueless? Are you that much of a snake, Jim Crane, that if the county and state allows it, right, you can't say, look, if we're allowed to by letter of the law, then we will we'll broach the topic and see what we can and can't do for the fans to be in attendance to watch their team. Now, what does he say? The only thing we have that can counter all the money we've lost is to get some people in the building and sell some tickets and merchandise and some cold beer. Look, man, I don't give.
I mean, I get what he's saying, but
cold beer,
it's in the delivery, which was just horrific given where they are right now. But I guess anything with the Astros, we shouldn't be shocked right now.
He said they didn't get a competitive advantage by what they did.
No.
Right.
No. Didn't happen.
All right. Thank you, Houston, for the gift that you keep giving to us. Coming up, much different conversation about Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach than we were expected to have with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. That's next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. Cold beer!
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.